sponsored by How to Be Amazing, a new audio show hosted by Michael Ian Black, available exclusively at audible.com. Please go to audible.com/MIB to show your support and get the first 4 episodes of How to Be Amazing for free. Welcome to Book Hype. I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Karen and Marima, and we're finally going to talk about The Red Queen, which I think we're all pretty excited to do. So, how are you guys, first of all?
Good.
I almost died today.
Oh!
What?
Okay, that's quite the lead in there. Okay, now you're going to have to explain yourself.
I nearly got into a car accident. A very large, like, 6-foot snowbank saved my life, but I kind of damaged the car a little bit. I'm fine, but it was a little scary.
Oh my goodness!
Ha! I told you snow is a good thing.
Yeah. Snow is the reason why I got into the accident to begin with.
I'm like, could you not see around the 6-foot snowbank? Because I know that's what's happening here.
No.
We can't actually see around it.
It was pretty big. No, the road, like, there's a big field down this road where I leave from work, and the snow just was blowing over it. Like, the rest of the roads were clear, not any snow on it. And this part was a whiteout, and I hit that, and I just, went off the road. But,
oh boy.
It's okay. That was my exciting story for the week.
We're glad you're not dead, Karen.
Yeah, seriously.
That was about as sentimental as I can get.
Oh, well.
She can muster right now.
Thank you. That means a lot to me.
All right. So, yeah.
Yeah, I try. I try.
Okay, so let's talk about what we've been reading, because I read a really good book that I'm going to bribe Marima to send me the rest of them. But Karen, you can start.
Okay. I read An Uncertain Choice by Jody Headland, and the reason why I'm kind of laughing right now is because you guys would absolutely hate this book.
Awesome.
No, it's basically a romance. It's a YA romance, so I know that you guys aren't totally into that. For the people out there that do like romances, this is a pretty good book. It's set back in, like, the 1300s, and it has a lot of really cool details about that time period that don't weigh down the story, but kind of, like, bring it up and subtly remind you of the time period that it takes place in. So I thought that was really cool. The story itself is pretty good. I kind of saw where it was going right from the beginning, but it was, like, an enjoyable light read anyway. So if you're into that sort of thing, give it a try.
Okay. And Marima, did you read anything this week?
Kind of. I started 2 things, but, like, I cannot overstate how ridiculous my life is right now. I started reading, I don't know if you guys saw the Showrunners documentary that came out, I want to say last year. It was a documentary with, like, Joss Whedon and Damon Lindelof and, like, all of these showrunners of various TV shows.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, they had a lot of stuff at Comic-Con, so they may have been, like, you may have noticed some of that. Anyway, they wrote this, like, companion book to it with all of these interviews, and I'm obsessed with, like, behind-the-scenes type things, so this is just amazing for me. So, yeah, I've started reading that. I have not gotten very far into it because, like I said, life. And the other book that I actually read, I did finish this one. So I've been having this, like, weird deja vu ever since we started talking about The Red Queen, because I was like, I'm sure I've read another book called The Red Queen. Like, what was that book? I could not work it out. And I was, like, Googling it and I couldn't find it. Anyway, I finally found it on my shelf, which one of my shelves, I should say. And so I read that, which is The Red Queen. It's a biography of, like, this English politician, Barbara Castle. It's like, she's this great, like, it's a very kind of feminist biography from, she was in the parliament in, like, the 1960s and stuff. Anyway, it's very funny. So, yeah, I finally tracked this book down and I was like, well, it feels fitting that I should read this in the week that we're talking about The Red Queen. So, yeah, that very, very strange choices this week, but that's all, unfortunately.
Got it. All right. So I, on the recommendation of Marima, finally got around to reading Every Breath by Ellie Marnie, And we can't get the rest of them here yet in the States. So I've taken to bribing Marima to please, please send me the last two because it's a trilogy. And you can't even get the second book here until September. I'm not okay with this. It is not okay.
So are you saying that you thought that the books were great and I am right in my assessment of them?
The books are fantastic. Loved them. Yes. Love them. Because it's not your typical, like, oh, this is a modern day Sherlock Holmes. It's totally not that. I mean, it is in some, like, there are bits of it here and there, but it's totally its own story and it has its own kind of mythology going on within it and stuff. So, yeah, you should all go read it. And if you live in the States, you can get the first book, Every Breath, right now, and I highly suggest you do so, because it's so good.
Yeah, and I interviewed her last week, actually.
Yeah, I saw that. That was awesome. But yeah.
Because the third one just came out, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, I really like the characters, and it's not overly done, and it doesn't take itself too seriously, and it's witty and intelligent, and the teenagers aren't like your typical, like, I don't know, maybe because they're not American teenagers, in a sense. They're different to me.
Australians are better in general. That is accurate.
Let's not push your luck now. Come on.
Who has the power here? Who has the extra books that you want?
I'm sure I can make another Australian friend if I need to.
Okay. All right, let's see.
I did live there once. yeah, so I don't know. It's cool. I really, really liked it, and I really need book two and book three, please. I beg of you. So, yeah, I don't know. But on to the question of the week, because I know you have all been waiting for this one. Our book bite this week, she even gets her own section because it's been such a big deal, is what did Karen choose for our next reading book? Woo!
I feel like should be like a game show or something. Like, that was a good introduction. Come on, Jen.
I do try. Woo! All right, Karen, so what did you choose
for our book? I have not finished reading this. I did start it, but I chose Charisma by Jean Ryan. And the reason why I chose this is because the basic premise of the story is it's about this really shy girl who has panic attacks because she's socially anxious. And she gets gene therapy to make her more charismatic. And the gene therapy is called Charisma. And what ends up happening, this is on the back of the book, so it's not a spoiler, is it becomes contagious and then deadly. And I was like, okay, we'll see, you know, how this is. But the cool thing about this, I think anyway, is that Jean Ryan, she has a PhD in, like, social welfare, and she's done a lot of really interesting things. Like, it says here on the back of the book that she ran war game simulations played by hundreds of soldiers at a time, developed technology solutions for social workers, researched the best theory and practices behind youth development programs. So she seems like a pretty intelligent lady. And the science in this, I mean, I don't know a lot about gene therapy, but it sounds very realistic.
Do
you? Okay, that's cool. So I'll be interested to hear your take on that then.
Alrighty. And you'll all be happy to know it is a book that I did send Karen, so.
So is it out now? Like, what's the deal? When does it come out? When is it out?
I don't know. It should be out March 3rd, so probably by the time people listen to this episode, it will be out.
So we can, like, do the review near the end of March so people have time to read it?
Yes.
Cool. Sounds fun. How did I know Karen would choose something, like, dystopian-y, sci-fi-y?
I have no idea how that
ever happened. A total surprise. Yep, I am blown away.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, guys. Wow.
Okay, but Karen, you did admit that everything I put in the box for you, which was primarily dystopian-based, was something you wanted to read. So.
I mean, yeah, definitely. Like, let's just get that out of the way, because, Jen, you definitely know the types of books that I like to read. And I was pulling out each book going, oh, my God, I really wanted to read this. Oh, my God, this sounds really good. So, yeah, I'm just going to lay that out right now.
I do try. All right, so let's see. Anything else we can talk about for Book Bites now that Karen has her book selection out of the way? Anything else we should discuss or talk about? No?
I feel like that was deserving of its own segment.
Yeah.
Karen, all the build up
that there's spotlight.
Been.
Spotlight.
I'm really nervous, though. Like, what if you guys hate it? Then I'm going to feel really guilty about it.
But you've chosen a book before for reviewing.
That's true.
Why are you so...
I don't know,
so
because
this one?
You guys made such a big deal out of it.
Yeah, well, that's true. But you chose... didn't you choose Steelheart? Wasn't that one of yours?
I did.
Yeah, yeah, and I really liked that.
See? You're all so, good.
There you go. It's all right. I'm sure it will be fine unless we really hate it, and then we will take it all out on you. No
exactly.
pressure.
Exactly. That's why I'm nervous, because
you know
I know you guys.
This, okay, what? Why am I getting lumped in with Marimal? You guys, I've never been that mean to you.
Oh, that mean?
On occasion.
I am not mean. I'm just, like, generally apathetic about everything.
Okay, all right.
It's okay. The more you guys Especially pick Karen. On me, the more I know you like me, so it's fine.
This is probably Yes. true.
Do people listen to this show and are like, do these people genuinely hate each other?
No, because like, we spend
happens?
A lot of time together.
We do.
What happens to each other in person? Like, is it Hunger Games? Do they all just, like, try and kill each other? Or do they all just sit in the corner and, like, not speak to each other? How does it work? And no. I would like to confirm that that is exactly what happens.
They all gang up on me first, so I'm like first to die in the Hunger Games.
Yeah. Oh my god. Or just sit in our separate corners and like communicate via like Facebook message because we don't actually speak to each other in person. That's in part of our contract that not required to talk to anyone else like in person. So yeah, it can be a tough time.
Oh my goodness, you guys they're gonna all think we're crazy.
I mean, if they didn't by this point.
This is true. This is true. All right. So you guys, just as a heads up, we talked about this at the beginning of the show that Audible has this new really cool podcast called How to Be Amazing. And it's hosted by Michael Ian Black. I'm not sure if you guys know who he is. He's done a bunch of TV work and stuff. He's really pretty funny. And it's exclusively at audible.com. And he talks with people about how they got from being like creative people to being creative forces of nature. And his first four guests were pretty cool. One of them is Bob Odenkirk, and he's the star of Better Call Saul. And of course, formerly of Breaking Bad. Elizabeth Gilbert, who is the author of Eat, Pray, Love. Lin-Manuel Miranda, the creator and star of The Heights and the new musical Hamilton. And then Tavi Gevinson is the founder of Rookie Magazine and one of the 25 most influential teens in America, as ranked by Time Magazine. So he's doing some pretty cool stuff with this new audio show. So for the first four episodes of How to Be Amazing for free, go to audible.com/MIB. That's audible.com/MIB. All right, so let's get on with this talk about the Red Queen. I feel like we've been, like, talking about the Red Queen forever because we keep saying, oh, we're going to do it, and we haven't gotten there yet. One thing to note is that The Red Queen, as a debut book, actually hit the New York Times bestselling list. I'm so happy for Victoria Aveyard because I think this book is really cool and she deserves it. And it's you guys know how hard it is to crack that New York Times bestselling list as a debut. So let's start off with the buy or borrow so people will get a sense of where we're coming from. Marima, buy or borrow?
Buy, definitely. I want to ask you guys something about this, but I guess I want to hear like whether you want to buy or borrow it first. So I just say, yeah, I talked about this when I first read it like many weeks, months ago at this point. But yeah, I really enjoyed it and I found it to be like quite different and yeah, go buy it. The end.
Okay. Karen?
Definitely buy it. It was a little bit slow getting into it and I was like, you know, I kind of knew where it was going from the back cover and I was like, okay, I just want to get to the good part. And once I hit that, it was like, I could not put it down. I loved it. It was really good.
Yes. And I am a buy as well. I actually really, really liked it. It's not your typical dystopian novel, I don't think, in a lot of ways. And I love the characters in this book. There's so many things going on in this book in so many different layers that I felt there was always something to kind of look at and pay attention to that maybe wasn't right in front of you on the page. So I really enjoyed it, which is awesome. So we actually all agree, which is not happened like a lot. So this is really cool. Yay for us. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the plot and the overview of the plot. So Karen, do you want to give an overview of the plot? Because you've read it the most recently out of all of us. And I want to make sure it's like fresh in everyone's mind.
Yeah, sure. So basically what happens is, in this book, is that there are two groups of people. You have the Reds and the Silvers. The Silvers have powers, and they're they control everything. They're the nobles, they're the kings, they have all the good positions, and the Reds are basically their slaves. And they live in really terrible conditions. The Reds don't have any powers. And there's this girl who is a Red, but she has powers. And they don't know how this is happening. And she kind of gets really caught up in the life of being a Silver because of it. And there are a lot of twists to the book, so I don't want to give like too much away. But it's got a lot of like political intrigue to it, and a lot of action, and a lot of like superpower type of things, and a little bit of romance. And that's one of the things I really like about it, is it has a little bit of everything, and it hits each of those notes really well.
Yes, I think that's good. I think one thing to note is that she doesn't know she has powers until she's put in an incredibly precarious situation. And even like then, they don't even know what to do with her, or, you know, who she is, where she came, or how it works, because it doesn't make any sense. So one thing to note, what I really liked, I mean, we have the two different bloodlines. You have the Reds and the Silvers. So, and it's literally they have red blood or they have silver blood. So you can tell there really isn't any impersonating, because you can tell by the color of their blood who they belong to, and or you know what social stratus they belong to, if you will. So the powers that are in this book are so cool. I really, really like that aspect of the book. What did you guys think about that part?
Yeah, that was definitely one of my favorite parts of it, I guess. Like, as you guys know, I really enjoy these kind of like X-Men-y books, that kind of trope, where people have like special powers but kind of in a mutated sort of way. So yeah, I really liked that aspect of it, and the powers are really cool. And I liked how they had such, like, she never explains it, and I'm assuming that we'll get to that at some point, why it kind of covers this huge scope and this huge range of powers, you know. Where this is like spoilers now, so if you haven't read it, like, seriously, stop now. But like at the end, when the brother can teleport and stuff, I was like, whoa, that's insane. You know, if that's where this is going, that is like so different from what we had seen up to that point. So I really liked how, yeah, it just, you know, the Silvers kind of had, oh, there's like this type of Silver and there's this type of Silver. And that was fun to be like, oh, there's kind of groups of them. But then you start seeing all of these different powers that sort of don't seem to have any connection with each other. So I'm intrigued to see how that plays out in the next one.
Yeah, I loved, because what happens is you have these families, and each family have kind of sets of powers, and the expectation is that their powers are very similar. But then you have like Mare, who's our lead character, and she shouldn't have any powers, and she does. And then, as Marima said later on, there her brother is, who's pretty much thought to be dead the entire time. And did any of you guys, first of all, did any of you guys, when they said that he was dead, think, yeah, no?
Or did pretty much.
Think, yeah, he's okay. I've gotten to the point where, when unless there's a body,
yes,
and I can see it, I don't believe you.
Like, well, it's like, why do you keep talking about how dead he is unless he's not going to be dead?
Well, not only that, but like, it was her favorite brother and it was all about him. And then I was like, yeah, no, he's not really dead. So it's just really cool how even between the Reds and the Silvers, how things start to come about. And for whatever reason, you know, we have Mare's family who has these powers, even though they're not supposed to. Or her and her brother, at least. So it's just a really cool, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but I just really enjoyed reading it. And you guys all know I'm not the biggest dystopian fan, so I think this had something extra to it. And I'm not really sure how to put my finger on it, but I really, really liked it. I'm trying to think. So the setting is basically, like Karen said, it's not post-apocalyptic per se. It's just this land where there's constantly a war. And the Reds, who have zero powers, mind you, except for Mare, are sent out to fight on the lines against the other groups, like the other kind of countries, if you will, within the same space. And there's kind of this is where like the political part comes in, is that the Reds have no, essentially no say in anything. And there's at 18, once you turn 18, if you're male or female, you're sent off to war if you don't have a job or an apprenticeship. And then if you're silver, you kind of just hang around and life is pretty swell because you have all the powers, literally. But even though you could go win the war, and the war would be a completely different thing if you went and fought it as a silver, they don't have to. They get to stay kind of in their really nice towns and palaces and whatnot. So I thought that was a really interesting way to kind of approach that. And then kind of moving on from there, you have this secondary kind of conspiracy of, they call it, it was the Red Dawn is Rising is what they say. I think that's their saying. And that's basically the group of people that are looking to fight against the Silvers in their own way, in a, like a revolutionary way. And one of the things I thought was super interesting was how they had the arena and they would have Silvers fight each other within the arena. So that it basically, and Mare even says it, she's like, it's the way that they make us know that they have the all the power and we have none. Because the Reds are required to go and watch the Silvers. It's meant to be their break, but really it's to put them in their places in a sense. How did you guys feel about all that stuff?
I need to ask my question.
Sure.
It's an important question. Has anyone read Red Rising by Pierce Brown?
Ages and ages and ages ago.
Okay, I have not read this, but I started seeing everyone comparing these two books together, and so I looked it up, and they actually sound really similar, like creepily similar, where there's like this caste system, and the lower ones are the Reds, and then the up ones are the Golds instead of the Silver, and they have like, you know, these sort of god X-Men-y powers, and then the character infiltrates their ranks and then tries to lead this rebellion from within, and it's literally called Red Rising, and like that's the saying of the characters in this book sort of. And I was just, I don't know, I was really thrown, I guess, when I sort of saw that, because I haven't read that, and so now I feel like I need to read it. I mean, to compare,
it's got a similar concept in the fact that there's the whole blood idea and the whole societal structure and stuff. But if I remember, it doesn't have all the components, because I didn't like Red Rising all that much because it was meant to be this huge deal. And I remember reading it and being like, I mean, it's okay. It's not like, oh my God, I'm in love with it. So to me, it wasn't that way. But okay, it doesn't mean someone else doesn't read it and see it as way more similar.
Well, I saw that as like a common criticism of Red Queen, so I was just curious.
Nope, completely understand. All right, Karen, what were you going
to
say?
I have a question about the setting, going back to that, because I always get a little bit confused in stories like this when it's dystopian, and clearly they have technology because they have electricity and that sort of thing, but it's also very primitive. You still have a lot of, like, mills working, and people are working in squalor, and it's just not the best conditions. And so it feels very medieval at times, but it also feels a little futuristic. And I don't believe they specifically said, like, if this was set in our world just in the future or if it was a different sort of, like, construct. But I thought I remembered something about, like, she said something in passing about 1,000 years ago, blah, 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 was more common. And I'm like, okay, is this, like, post-United States, but, like, 1,000 years in the future? Did you guys get any sense of when it could have taken place?
Oh, it's been a while since I've read it. I assumed that it was like a different world, but I wouldn't be surprised if you know, when she's like learning all about the kind of history and everything that's going on and stuff, if maybe there was some connection there that I just honestly can't remember, because that does seem to be a sort of trope that authors like to do, where it's, they kind of connect it. And then, you know, as we've talked about before, there's like random worlds where it's like 4,000 years in the future, but everyone suddenly wears medieval outfits again.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So I guess it could be kind of something like that.
Sorry, is that what you're talking about?
I don't know what you're talking. What could I possibly be referring to? Yeah, maybe. I had assumed that it was just like a different world, but I don't know, maybe.
Okay, maybe we'll,
I think,
learn
I would
more
prefer if it was
in the second book.
Yeah. Do you like have a preference for which one you would want it to be?
I feel kind of the same way as you. It's always really strange to me when it's set in the future and yet it's like they've gone back in time And, like, I think that works in some cases, but only if you explain why they've gone back to, like, totally medieval times, and yet it's, like, 1,000 years in the future. So,
right.
I mean, I don't know. I like the fact that they still have the technology and stuff because it makes for a more interesting story, especially given Mare's powers, but I guess it doesn't really matter to me. I just want to know.
Yeah. I have a question for you guys. Mm-hmm. When I read this, I don't know if this was how you felt as well. I really felt like this book basically not copied, but like incorporated tropes from every possible like YA popular book at the moment. Like, you know, there's the obvious, there's like the selection. That's when, you know, she goes off with the prince and she has to like become someone different or whatever. There's that going on. There's like, you know, this kind of fight to death, Hunger Games.
Better than the
things.
Selection.
No, no, no. I'm not saying.
I know. Sorry. I thought that too as soon as I read it.
There's like the divergent thing of, you know, all of these mutations like start appearing in the population and it's like, oh, like they're all divergent, you know? And I mean, I could keep going, but there's like 35 things. I was just wondering if you felt similarly to that. I was reading it. I was like, oh, and like this is the Hunger Games section. And like, oh, and this is the like Queen of the Teeling reference and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. Not to say that I didn't enjoy it. Like, I really enjoyed the book in spite of that. Because I still was surprised as I was reading it. That's what I really liked about it, right. Is I was like, I've seen all of these tropes literally 100 times before, and right. I still was surprised by the end.
I think it was because the way she put things together, and they were done smartly. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think the whole thing with the part that's very reminiscent of the selection, she shouldn't be part of the Queen's trial. It's not something that she's really technically meant to be involved in. And in the end, she ends up with a prince to some extent. And so I think for me, I think the way it was handled and the way it was executed and the way that whole relationship kind of worked its way through was really intriguing and different for me, not like something we had seen before. So I think I liked it because it had so many things woven together and it didn't feel heavy handed and it didn't feel like, oh, here's this thing from this book. And oh, here's this thing that we have to hit these marks in order for it to be considered X, Y, or Z. I think it just did a really nice job of being itself and weaving in all of these different things to tell its story. I don't think anything was unnecessary or overly done. I think it was really well and handled really nicely so that the read was really twisty and you didn't always know what was going to happen. You couldn't predict just because you read a book that was similar, whereas in many cases you can predict. You know, I didn't feel like that was something that was easy to predict throughout the book. Like, you always had a lot of things that were surprising. What about you, Kerr?
I feel pretty much the same way. I actually, it reminded me a lot of Steelheart, too, because they had powers and they thought that they were gods because of it.
Yeah.
But I definitely agree with you, Jen, that it's more like she took the best elements of those different tropes, and because she wove all of them together, that you couldn't always tell what was going to happen. I mean, I did guess some of the twists, but she drew it out for so long in some cases that you started to really doubt yourself. And you're like, well, maybe she isn't doing this. And I think it comes down to how well it was written that those things didn't necessarily matter. Because if you look at any group of books these days, like, they basically come down to a certain set of tropes or a certain set of types of stories that are being written, and you can relate a lot of them to each other. So it's more like in the execution rather than what they're actually doing with it.
Yeah, I agree. I was just wondering what you thought.
Yep. I actually liked it, which is weird because usually that stuff is a little overwhelming, but
well, yeah, that's why I really liked, I think I found it really clever, like you were saying, the way that, she incorporates basically every popular YA trope at the moment. You know, they all go through sort of phases. And so these are all the ones that are hot right now. And so hot right now. And
oh boy.
And it still was like, I still was surprised as I was reading it by like various parts, and it kind of went in directions that I wasn't expecting. And I really, really appreciated the ending You know, I guess everyone has a trope that like really drives them crazy. And for me, that trope is the love triangle.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So the fact that she didn't really go there, I was really pleased about. So I think maybe that kind of saved it for me, right, in terms of that. Like if she had gone a different direction with that, I might have thought, oh, I hate tropes, they're the worst, like this is terrible. But because she didn't do that, I was like, I love them, this is so great, you know.
That's actually something I wanted to ask you guys about, because I mean, I realize that I like, you know, the romance aspects of books a lot more than you guys do, but I thought that this was handled so well because of that, because even though there were a lot of different guys in this book that were obviously vying for her attention, not even just the two main princes, but just in general, she caught a lot of eyes, that it wasn't so overly done and she didn't like stick to that so much. Like it wasn't constantly in her mind like, oh, I wonder which one really likes me. It was more like, yeah, I need to play this game to survive. So even though I like both of these guys right now, I have more important things to think about.
Right. And I think her focus was heavily on the revolution. And I think at one point you maybe think she sways to one brother rather than the other. And I think that comes with the things that he's doing to help her, or so you think. And it kind of goes from there. So I agree with you. I like that because it walked a fine line. It wasn't overbearing. It wasn't, I think so often in, you know, YA novels, especially when it comes to this sort of thing, there's a heavy-handedness with, like, the romance aspect of it to kind of make it a little, to kind of save itself from the dreariness of the, like, apocalypse and everything else that goes on in these novels, that you get caught up in that aspect of it, and it doesn't kind of open itself up to everything else that's going on, whereas this girl had a focus. Her focus was to save her people. And to do whatever she could to do that. And if that meant pretending to be, you know, close to one person when she, you know, really wasn't, or whatever that was, she was going to do it. Basically, everything she did while in the palace was essentially a lie on a lot of levels. And then later on, she comes to find out that she wasn't the only one lying, and that it's kind of an ugly turn. But at the same time, I just, yeah, I get what you guys are saying.
Yeah, I agree. I liked it. I'm not a big fan of romance, not much of a like shipper, I guess. But yeah, as Jen said, I liked that the way that she navigated it was really through a framework of survival, not so much, oh, and like this boy's so dreamy, because I cannot stand that. If you are trying to convince me that someone is in a precarious position in their life, in terms of like actually being able to survive from day to day, and then and you spend like five chapters telling me all about their love life, like those do not work together for me. You know, if someone has time to dwell on their love life, they ain't in that much danger. <You know? laughs> So I really, yeah, I liked the way that it was navigated. It felt very realistic to me, I think, like in terms of how she sort of bounces between them a little bit based on who is not even the most useful, but I guess who she finds offers the most support to her, because she feels very alienated. And I really liked at the end of it that she was just like, you know, there wasn't some grand like romantic gesture between her and Cal. Or, you know, she wasn't like, oh, like Maven broke my heart or anything like that. She was just like, I'm going to kill him. And I was like,
She is like all the good parts of Katniss and Triss kind of rolled into one, I think. Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. I so agree with that because, and Merrima, I know you'll be mad at me for this, but Katniss, I've always liked Katniss.
Don't even start.
But I always felt like she never had any emotion. And I realized that's part of her character in a lot of ways, but it made it hard for me to really connect to her. But Mare is still strong in the same way that Katniss is, but she lets herself feel more. And I think that's why I really connected to her character.
Oh, that's just because you're, like, an emotional person, and I'm a robot like Katniss, so that's why I appreciate Katniss more.
All right, there we go.
Yeah, there's a little book-type psychoanalyst for you.
What was that line in Big Hero 6? I'm a robot. I cannot be offended.
Oh, my God, I love Big Hero 6. Like, I got that for my niece, and we've literally watched it, like, four times already.
When that line, I saw that that movie with Karen twice, and when that line came on, I just leaned over to Karen and whispered, "Story of my life," and she just lost it. Anyway, sorry, were we talking about...
We're talking about a book. Yeah, let's focus. Yeah, refocus. Yeah. No more Big Hero 6. I don't know. So I don't want to ruin it. So let's talk about some of the characters. I just feel like there's so much to talk about in here. So we talked about Mare and why we like her so much. Let's talk a little bit about Cal. Now, mind you, Cal is the oldest prince, so he is the biggest catch when it comes to... And Queen's Trial is basically this, like, showing off of your powers. So basically two girls who come from, like, the top-tier houses who have really cool powers face off against each other in an arena to... Or not... No, they don't, actually. I'm sorry. I take it back. They just demonstrate their powers in the arena, not fighting against each other, to kind of show how strong they are and who would make the best alliance with the prince, who is Cal. So Cal's, like, the big prize. And he's a really interesting character because Cal is the reason that Mare gets discovered to have powers in the first place. She tries to pick his pocket because he's kind of slumming it down at the local pub and nobody really knows he's the prince. And so when she tries to pick his pocket, he catches her. And most people don't catch Mare. She is that good. And so they talk about it, or, you know, they talk for a few minutes and he gives her, you know, gives her the coin she was trying to steal. And then he goes off. And the next day, Mare gets called to the palace and finds out she's got this kind of swank new job that she shouldn't have because she should have been, you know, in a couple of months sent off to the war. So what did you guys think about Cal? Because he's a challenging character to love. I think you can really like him, but I think he has a lot of flaws, too.
I actually found Cal to be the least interesting character in the book because I think maybe he was a little too close to other characters that we've seen of that, you know, like, oh, he's the prince with the heart of gold, you know. The only thing, I guess, that kind of intrigued me about him was when he was like talking about going off to war and all of that, that kind of gave him a bit more of an edge, I suppose. But just, you know, like, I'm not saying he wasn't like a nice character or he wasn't a likable character or anything. I just didn't find him very interesting. I just didn't find that he had, I guess, a huge amount of depth to him. And I imagine that we will be seeing more of that in the next book. And it makes sense that we didn't see a lot of that in this book because, you know, he and Mare weren't being entirely honest with each other. But yeah, I didn't really care about him. Soz.
I actually don't think he had a heart of gold, and I think that's why I liked him and why I thought he was interesting, because even though he wanted to do the right thing, I think the influence from his father really clouded his brain in a lot of ways, and he did think that Reds were subservient, and maybe he didn't want to treat them as poorly as his father had, but, you know, he still went after the, you know, so-called terrorists, and he didn't have any trouble torturing them or killing them. And I think that shows how complex of a character he is. And it made him a little hard to like, but it also made him more real. And I think that's why I ended up by the end of the book saying, okay, yeah, you have some flaws. There's some things I don't like about you, but there's a lot of potential for him to grow now. And I think that makes it a lot more interesting than him just being like, yes, I've always wanted to do the right thing my entire life, and now I'll finally get the chance to, because we have seen that a lot.
I think I agree with you, Karen, because there were some times where he was like, well, he saves Mare, let's face it. He doesn't want to send her out to war, yet he still believes in sending all the other Reds to war. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of contradictory in his beliefs. Like, he wants to save people, but at the same time, he doesn't see how to get around the war, so he just goes with what's already known. You go with the war because that's what you have to do. So I think it's really interesting, and I think he is complex in a lot of ways, so...
I feel like I need to just add to that. I don't mean heart of gold in like he's like a nice guy. I mean, compared to the other characters, like, he's the only character who seems to show any sort of contrition, I guess. No, just, you know, like, I guess some regret or some like remorse for the experience of the Reds. Not that he necessarily does anything to like address that, but he's really the only indication, sort of one of the only indications amongst the Silvers, that there is anyone who sort of feels like, well, you know, even in his treatment of Mare, like, maybe there are some Reds who are different or whatever, like, you know, blah. I just didn't find it very interesting, but I can understand where you're coming from.
Okay, so let's talk about Killorn. And Killorn is Mare's friend. And Mare does a lot to try and save Killorn in a lot of different ways because Killorn had an apprenticeship. He was never going to have to go off to war. And then, unfortunately, the person he's apprenticing with dies, which means that Killorn will now have to go. They call it conscription. It's when you basically get drafted into the war. So Mare finds a way to, or she's trying to find a way to save him, and that's where she kind of first discovers the rebels. She doesn't really know what they're up to at first, but she knows that they can smuggle Killorn to safety. And essentially she wants to go too, except it costs a lot of money. Now, I like Killorn, but at the same time, I felt like he was so ungrateful for the things that Mare was trying to do to him, for him, and the things that she was trying to like the things she had to give up and change to try and save him.
I mean,
Yeah,
we
way to
can.
change my mind. I think he was the worst one.
Yeah, I agree. We can basically agree he's Gale, right?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
But like a
And
worse version.
yeah, exactly. And he was just boring and really like flat to me, very one-dimensional, and so never really ended up caring for him. And even less so when he was being so rude and so mean and so angry all the time. I was just like, you do realize what a terrible position she's in. You have no right to be mad at her for, you know, what she's going through right now.
And it felt like there was a lot of open jealousy, and there didn't need to be. Like, I didn't get the feel that she was in love with him ever, nor did she give him that kind of vibe. So it was a weird dynamic to have there, and I don't know. I just didn't
Yeah,
like it sometimes.
I feel like a lot of their dynamic was based on the fact that maybe he was sort of used to be the dominant person in that friendship. You know, like he would look out for her and he would help her out and stuff. And then it turned out where he needed to rely on her in some way, and he did not seem super comfortable about that fact. And because of that, I was like, no, I'm done with you. And the reason that I actually forgot that he was in the book. That's why I was like, Cal is the least interesting. I just forgot that he was there because he was so dull. Like he didn't offer anything. He was very much just like the Gale character, but less useful and less complex. So yeah, I could have done without him. But I hope that that whole like, I guess, romantic aspect, at least on his part in that like friendship, is done because I got the sense that it was at the end of the book. I don't know about you guys. I felt like, yeah, I think that's, you know, they've addressed that and that's done.
Yeah, I
But I
think
hope that
so.
doesn't come back because then I will be furious.
I don't think it will. I think I'm hoping we're past that now. Yeah. All right, so let's talk. There were some incredibly kind of complex, and you never knew what these characters were going to do. The first one is Farley, and Farley is kind of the ringleader of the revolution. And she's kind of a badass. I kind of liked her, but at the same time, I always questioned her motives. So, what did you guys think of Farley?
I think she lives in a moral gray area. She has a lot on her plate and a lot of burden to bear. And so I can see why she would view things actually in very much the same way the Silvers do, because she's like, okay, this is what we have to get done. If, you know, a couple hundred people die in the process, then that's just what has to happen for us to be able to get our freedom back. And she definitely looks at the big picture, which I think is the strength of a leader, but it also makes it hard to like her because you're like, well, you know, you may have just killed somebody that we liked or that Mare liked or something like that, and it could make it hard to sympathize with her sometimes.
I definitely see that. Merrima, any thoughts on Farley?
No, I would basically agree with what Karen said. I found the character to be very interesting, oftentimes frustrating as well. But what I guess what I really liked about this book was that no one was sort of in a black and white position. Like even Cal, like dull as he is, you know, had some gray to him. And I think Farley is probably the most overt of those. You know, like it's very clear that she really just does what she needs to do to achieve the ends that she wants. And you know, I appreciated that about she's a dishonest character, but she's honest about her dishonesty. You know what I mean? Like she never pretends that she never pretends that she's, you know, sweet and lovely and wholesome and whatever. She's very upfront about the fact that she's willing to do whatever it takes. And I think you need a character like that in a story like this if you're going to tell it. You can't have everyone who's really nice and, you know, like, oh, but, you know, just we have to think about everyone's perspective. And like, let's just have a rational conversation about this. You need characters like Farley who are sort of action and go for it. And, you know, it makes for interesting reading, surely.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Let's talk about two of the most manipulative characters in the entire book. The first one was blatantly manipulative. She didn't care. It was quite obvious that Queen Alara was going to use Mare to her advantage no matter what. And something I think we should really quickly explain is that Cal and Maven, who are the princes in this story, are really only half-brothers. They have a different mother. The first queen, Cal's mom, died, which that's a whole nother storyline we can talk about shortly. And so the new queen is Queen Alara, and she is... I don't know. She is so manipulative and nasty, and she is really no use for Mare. And had Mare not been seen being able to use electricity in the middle of an arena, she would have been dead. No questions asked. But because it was so obvious and she was seen by everyone, they couldn't just execute her. They had to come up with a plausible reason. But Alara makes it very clear that Mare is only useful as long as everything keeps moving forward. She steps one toe out of line, that it's done. That they will end her if they have to. It's not, she doesn't care. And she's just, I don't know, she's like evil. I really felt like from the first time we read about her that she is just truly this nasty thing. What did you guys think?
Yeah, she was kind of, I had some problems with her. Obviously, she's a crazy bitch, but also.
There's that.
I think she was sort of representative of really the only issue I had with this book, which was that I felt like it was very hard on the female characters more so than some of the male characters. And maybe like that's just my own, you know, interpretation of it. But especially with the queen and with I can't remember her name, but the girl that Cal is like going to marry, the crazy one.
Evangeline.
Yes. Evangeline.
And it was an E.
And they're, like, painted as very similar characters, these two. But I kind of don't feel like there are any female characters in here who are, I guess, characterized as quote-unquote good, except for Mare. I don't know if you guys can, like, correct me if you feel like I've missed someone. But, yeah, I feel like all of the female characters kind of get a tough ride except Mare. And that worries me because, you know, I never want to read a book where, like, there's only one... female character who's allowed to, like, I guess, develop or, you know, like, have some sort of character arc. Because, yeah, the Queen and Evangeline were definitely, like, firmly on the evil side of the scale, as it were. So I would agree with what you're saying, but it was sort of representative of a larger issue for me in terms of the book, and one that I would hope that will be rectified going forward. But, yeah. It's a little worrying at times.
I can see that. I think one other character, albeit a very minor one, was Mare's sister, who was very sort of innocent and good and naive in a lot of ways. But then again, she wasn't a main character. And, you know, pretty much all of the silver characters, the female silver characters, were bad or they were just antagonistic toward Mare. And maybe that had to do with the position that they were in and, you know, their sort of fight for their own kind of survival. But I definitely, now that you point that out, see that problem and hoping going into book two, as they go into like the red camp, you know, the rebellion and stuff, that maybe there'll be a few more female characters that Mare can become friends with and we can sympathize with.
Right. Or just that, you know, offer a different perspective or something rather than being antagonists, I guess. Because, yeah, I agree with what you're saying about the sister, but in a way, like, she was sort of a passive character because she was really there for Mare to protect her and, like, for her brothers and her family, really, to protect her as the youngest. So, yeah, I don't know. Just something I'll be like keeping my eye on, I guess, as this series progresses.
No, I definitely understand what you're saying there. All right, so moving right along, let's talk about... I think he is probably the most... I was the most shocked with his kind of character arc and the turn that it took. Maven, Prince Maven. And he is the prince that Mare ends up being betrothed to. And all along, he plays it kind of like he's in it to help her, and they're, you know, they're buddies, and isn't this great? And then, really... it's all just a big fat lie.
So you didn't see that coming?
I don't think so. Not when I was reading it, I didn't. Maybe I was just thinking he was nice.
I kind of thought it was going in that direction, but then I was really worried about this love triangle thing. And if this was like a straight up, no, I'm serious. If this was like a straight up love triangle, then he wouldn't have betrayed her, because that would have been the focus, you know. The focus would have been like, oh, but she's torn between these two guys, and like, what does she do, and, you know, blah blah blah. And I was so worried that it was going to go that way that I had like convinced myself that, oh no, that's where this is going, and like there was so much potential, and she's going to ruin it with this terrible love triangle and everything. So when he actually turned out to like be the bad guy, I was so pleased, because yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that there's something going on with Maven as you read the book. Like,
right, I think that's
as you read it,
obvious, but...
yeah, as you read it, you don't think like, oh yeah, this is a straight up guy. Like, he's 100% honest. But yeah, I don't know how to say it. Yeah, I anticipated something like that would happen, but I was worried that it wouldn't happen, if that makes sense. Like, I was worried that she wouldn't take it in that direction. Yeah, which I felt like made the most sense. And Maven was the most interesting character, I think, for me, because of that. So, yeah. Karen, I get the feeling that you totally called this. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for you to gloat.
I do feel kind of along the same lines as you, though, where it's like, I thought something was up in the beginning, because I was like, no, this isn't, you know, clearly, like, it's sort of being set up that Mare is going to end up with Cal, or that they're going to have something. So I was like, clearly Maven has to be like a bad guy for that to work out. And then as the story went on, it kept going, 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 and he started being more and more helpful. And I was like, okay, maybe I'm wrong, but I still have a bad feeling about this. And then I don't remember his name, but the old guy, the professor, he was like, you know, Maven is just like his mother. And I was like, right there, that guy is going to be right. I know it.
That was the one that was that the one that was the Cal's mother's brother?
Yeah. And I was like, right there. I kept remembering that line over and over again. I was like, don't trust him, don't trust him. And by the end, I was like, okay, he's being really helpful, but how is this going to flip it on its head? Like, how is what he's doing going to help him? And I think that final reveal of their long-term plan was really clever, actually, even though I did kind of know something was up, but the way, like, the result of it was pretty cool.
I think I knew something was up. I didn't expect it to be what it was, though. Like, it was so, I don't know. It wasn't what I expected.
That was a long con for Maven and his mother.
Yeah, that was a seriously long con, and it was solid. So that's why I think, like, while I expected him to do something, you know, something, I wasn't expecting it to be so manipulative and evil and have him be so much like his mother. I think is what kind of threw me for the loop on that one.
Yeah, and I didn't expect them to be thrown into like the execution death arena either. I was like, okay,
there was that.
I thought they were going to get away.
Exaggerated response, maybe, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Sorry, what'd you say, Karen?
Sorry, I just said I thought they were going to get away because they were running, like they escaped the room or whatever, and the guards were coming, and I was like, no, they'll be fine, they'll escape. And then Cal was just like, no, we need to give up. There's no way that we can face all of these guys. And I was like, what's going to happen now? And then, yeah, they threw him in there. That final, like, battle scene was really cool. I liked that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed that a lot.
All right. So are there any other... Those are pretty much all the characters. Can you guys think of any of the other characters you wanted to talk about?
Oh, I feel bad because I can't remember his name, but I just want to, like, shout my appreciation for that professor guy that Karen was just talking about.
Is his name Jesse or something like that? Did it begin
with... It starts with a J, for sure.
I have no idea. I'm pretty sure Jesse is the name of a, like, 17-year-old in a boy band, so I don't think it was that, but...
It's something like that, though.
I really, Julian!
Julian! I see, I knew it was J.
I'm just flipping through my book and I found it.
I totally just picked up my book, too, to start looking.
yeah, how weird.
Shout out to Julian.
Yeah, I really liked him, but I feel like he's probably dead, so that's a shame.
Yeah, well, it's hard when they, you know, already take out your sister. The next logical step is you. And Julian had some really, really cool powers. I think that's the other thing to keep in mind, is that Julian was, like, he was what they called a singer. So, essentially, he could do, like, this really cool thing where he could control you. I know that probably doesn't seem very cool. But in the Land of Powers, he's got pretty much the most intense power. And then his sister was the same way. So there were a lot of things said about his sister and how she got the crown, unfortunately. So, I don't know. All right, so moving on, let's talk about the ending, which we kind of already touched upon. The epilogue basically is the aftermath of the big kind of fight in the middle of the arena and how where that goes. So what did you guys think of the epilogue and what we kind of discover in that space?
The epilogue really sold the book for me, I think. Because, I don't know, I liked the focus of, like, you know, they're going to go and follow up about these people on this list and... like, see about these mutations, I guess, because for me, that's the most interesting part of this story. You know, the most interesting part is not, oh, like, there's a war going on and that's politically complicated, or, oh, there's the love triangle and it's, like, super dramatic. It's about, oh, like, why are these people mutating? That's so weird. I want to know more about it. So I liked that. And as I said before, I really liked how someone kind of says something about their romance or whatever, and she's like, what? No romance. Like, I mean, have you seen, like, what we've been doing to each other? That's basically destroyed. And I was like, good, please. That's a realistic response. And then she's just like, I'm going to kill him. Great. Like, mic drop. And I thought that was... I thought that was a really appropriate response to all of the things that had just happened. So
yeah, it was pretty solid.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like, by the time I got to the epilogue, I was like, okay, this is a good book. I've really enjoyed it. But, you know, sometimes you read something, it's like what I would call the How I Met Your Mother syndrome. It's like you go all the way through a story and then something happens at the end and it just ruins the entire thing for you. And you're like, yes. Oh, like, that's such a waste of my time now. So, and oftentimes epilogues are like that because, you know, someone just says something or does something and you're like, oh, like, you just negated your entire character growth in this entire book. So I really liked the epilogue of this. And yeah, it made me definitely want to read the next one. So yeah. I'm sold. I'm convinced.
And it's some serious business if it's managed to convince Marima. So
yeah. We all know that I hate everything, so.
This is quite possibly true. Anyway, Karen, any final thoughts on this?
The romance thing really stuck out to me where she was like, you know, I betrayed him and he betrayed me and we both betrayed you. She's talking to Maven. And I was like, yeah, you know, you can't be in love with somebody, first of all, instantly. And after everything they've done to each other, you know, love doesn't necessarily transcend all those horrible things that happen. So I hope that if Cal and Mare end up do getting together, that it is sort of like a slow thing, like a slow burn. Aha, because he has fire powers.
Man, wow.
Classic.
That is your pun for the night. There you go.
Karen, quote a bet. I'm proud of you for that joke, Karen.
Thanks. So I hope it is slow and that it builds up really nicely. The other thing that I really liked about the epilogue was the brother, even though I had a feeling he wasn't dead, but just to sort of like confirm that, and the fact that he had powers and the type of powers that he had, I thought was really exciting, and I can't wait to meet some of the other Reds that have powers too.
Yes, I agree. I loved that they held out to like the very end to reveal that Shade was still alive. I thought that was
Yes.
super cool.
She did that a lot throughout this book because it got to the point where I was like, okay, maybe he really is dead. Okay, maybe Maven really is a good guy because it was like the last part of the book and you're like, oh no, I was right all along. So she did a good job.
Basically, the book has one big long con in it for everyone.
Yes.
Like one after another, and you don't know which way it's going to go because she holds on to it just to the point where you think, oh no, the book's got to be over. There's nothing more that can happen. She kind of hits you with it, which I thought was one of the highlights of the book, because just when you think you've got your mind made up that no, it's not possible, there's no story left to tell, she kind of comes up with the next bit of story, which I think is awesome. So that would be why I liked it a lot, in case you guys didn't get that vibe from me as we were talking. So anyway, I hope you guys check out The Red Queen. I think it's a great book, and especially for those of you who like dystopian, and even for those of you who don't, because I am not a huge dystopian junkie, I think that it has a lot to offer. So, and as we know, next time, our book for the end of March will be Charisma by Jean Ryan. And we will be reading that probably like at the very end of March, because it doesn't come out until the 3rd, which is probably when you guys will be downloading this podcast. And so we'll give everyone some time to read it, including us, because Karen's the only one who's read it so far. All right. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Emma.
Bye, guys.
Bye.